From the 1800s all the way into the 1960s, hundreds of thousands of Native American children were removed from their homes and families, stripped of their culture, and placed in boarding schools run by the federal government and churches. This trauma is detailed by the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition in Minneapolis. What do you think of the federal government's initiative to explore the legacy of these schools and search the grounds of former facilities? What do you hope will come out of it? 800-642-1234. Sasa Nasa Jennings is the Native American Student Success Coordinator for the UW system. She's a member of the Menominee Nation. Sasa Nasa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So we've been seeing the news reports over the past couple of months, the remains of as many as 1,000 Native American children found at former boarding schools in Canada, remains also found at a school in Pennsylvania. How is this news that's unfolding affecting you personally?
It's bittersweet, right? Like it's a very complicated subject. I'm glad that the young ones and the young ancestors that went on too soon are being returned to their communities and hopefully having a ceremony that they needed to have a long time ago. But it also, you know, shows the tragic history of our nations and how our Native people were treated. I think a lot of it has to do with really reconciling what that means, but also giving space to those communities to be able to grieve and make sure their ancestors are being laid to rest in an appropriate manner. Recognizing that, you know, we have a tragic, dark history, and how do we move forward without repeating those steps?
You grew up on the Menominee Reservation where a boarding school existed. How did your family and friends talk about these schools? How did you view them when you were growing up?
You know, we do have a Catholic church that is here. My grandpas and grandmothers talked about it, but they never talked about some of the things, you know, really that happened. You know, I was mentioning to your producer that there was a news segment done on our tribal nation that talks about some of the unmarked graves that are here. And it just, you know, gives you some type of perspective, right, of what our ancestors had endured, and really thinking about how do we treat those who have been through that, but also how do we work with our families to help reconcile what their family members have been through. And so, you know, there's always rumblings of, you know, people who attended or this is kind of what they did, but there was never a lot of talk about it. I know my grandmother, her grandmother, her mother, she spoke Menominee, but I'm not sure if, you know, attending the boarding school really deterred her from speaking more to us. She had words here and there that she would speak, but really just, you know, trying to understand what our ancestors went through and why it's gotten us here in our communities now.
Yeah. So it sounds like the trauma is passed from one generation to the next, and there's still so much mystery that remains around it. Do you know if there are remains located near Wisconsin's former boarding schools?
That I'm not quite sure, right? I'm not a historian or archaeological person, but I do, you know that if things had happened the way things are playing out in the rest of the other communities, as well as the other boarding schools, there's a high probability of it could have happened. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't know why and how these people who are running the boarding schools, you know, what their mentality was, you know, we can guess, you know, and really think about, you know, why they were trying to cover up some of these things. But, you know, I would guess, personally would say, I think there's a high probability that there are. And we need to make sure that we give our communities time to grieve and space to do that, but also help to recognize why this is such an important and really long foreseen issue that we are uncovering. And, you know, it took us how many years to really think about these young ancestors who went on too soon, but also, you know, what impact that had on the communities. And, you know, we strive to be resilient, and we are continuing to be resilient. Our communities are working with our youth, our communities are working on their language and culture, but really thinking about, you know, why we had to get to where we are now, and helping our communities do that in a good way.
Sasanisa, you know, one of the images that was posted in an article that was just so heart-wrenching was this encampment across the road from a boarding school, because the parents weren't allowed to see their children, and it was their only ability to see a glimpse of their children. How does the damage carry on? How does that damage endure?
When we think about, right, we think about the main policies that were put in place at that time was this idea to remove these young ones from their community in order to assimilate them into being American, right? Mm. And so this idea of removal and stripping them of what they know to be home and what they know to be love and what they know to be who they are, I think that's really telling, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we're not letting our young ones have their parents and their loved ones be a part of who they are as they grow up. We're stripping them and removing them. And so, you know, a lot of the things that I think about is how we do that today and what that looks like today and what are some of the things and practices that we maybe not understand or think about, but how do we continue to do that and not make that mistake, right? Mm-hmm. And not be 50 years down the road and have a similar picture.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that work today. We have Sasanisa Jennings, Native American Student Success Coordinator for the UW system. And in her work, she talks with tribal leaders and elders and students to hear about their experiences and how to create a more supportive environment for Native students on campuses across the state. You can join in 800-642-1234. What is not understood about Native American culture in the academics setting? We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The federal government is investigating the troubled legacy of U.S. policies related to Native American boarding schools and searching the grounds of these former facilities that lasted over a century. According to the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, hundreds of these schools operated in 29 states, including here in Wisconsin. Sasanisa Jennings is Native American Student Success Coordinator for the UW-Wisconsin system, liaison between Wisconsin First Nations and the system. She's with us for 10 more minutes. Your research has looked at the legacy of these Native American boarding schools on higher ed today, and I'm wondering if you can make some of those connections to us. What similarities do you see between the boarding schools and our current education system as it exists today?
Yeah, when you're doing your research, it kind of develops how it needs to be. And that's one of the things. I didn't go into my research really thinking about these things. It kind of came out as I was doing it, really looking at the policies of the 19th and 20th century around education and citizenship. And really what those policies were looking at was this idea of assimilation, right, and acculturation for Native people. And a part of that, you know, not to go too deep about it, but this idea of the settler colonialism and how as Native people needed to be erased in a particular way in order for settler colonialism to be successful along with the enslavement of other folks, particularly Black folks. And so really one of the ways, right, outside of actually mass genocide, was to use education as this tool of social control. And a part of that was removing our young ones from their communities, right, getting them away from the languages, the cultures, the very essence of who they were, to Americanize them, right? Mm-hmm. and so that removal and that assimilation were the two big things that I was looking at and seeing how, as an American higher education public, I want to make sure we're looking at the right public institution, how we continue to do that. And this idea of removal is very strong, right? We think about our students have to be removed from our communities, whether it be a reservation community, whether it be an urban community, a suburban community, they need to be removed to go to these institutions to learn these things that what we deem the American public as successful, in order to be a successful person, right? It's a very similar parallel idea. And as in this idea of assimilation too, there's an idea and there's a way of what we think and how we do school. I put that in quotations, how we understand to be a student. And oftentimes that can be at very contrast to who we are as Native people. So our students need to really navigate what those situations are. And sometimes, you know, having to be in school when particular ceremonies are happening or during harvest season and having to pick, right, are they going to be in school during these times or are they going to go home? And then think about what those consequences are.
Yeah. Let's take a call now. Maddie is joining us from De Pere. Hi, Maddie.
Hello.
Hi. You're a member of the Oneida tribe.
That's correct. And I wondered if your guests had ever heard, I heard on your station, was the story was read of, I think it was Little Hawk and something or another. But what it was memoir of Raymond Cacadash. And from what I understand, it was such an interesting story. I wanted to purchase a CD of it. They got it from the Wisconsin Veterans historical thing, and I was not able to purchase a CD of that story. And also, I interviewed and recorded several of the Oneida people who went to the boarding school. In our case, it was not forced. And the parents or grandparents made the decision whether the children would go to the boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have those interviews, Mandy. What did you learn from the interviews?
Well, like I said, they were not forced.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was decision, you know, it was because the parents knew that the children had to learn how to speak English. Many of them, by the time they were 10 or 12 years old, they didn't know a word of English. And it was not easy, you know, because none of us would want to go from home to some strange place among people we didn't understand and their language.
Well, Sasanesa, I want to jump in here and allow you to talk about the importance of taking down this history and doing these first-person interviews.
Yeah, thank you, Maddie, for bringing that up. That it's also, you know, I have a friend in Alaska who talks about this, like the her experience of boarding schools was not as negative. And so we need to also look at the holistic view of what these brought forward, right? And why parents may have wanted to send their students to these institutions. I think it's very important to have all sides recognized, really thinking about, you know, those who had maybe a more positive experience, but those who also maybe had a negative experience, because I think it's a similar parallel to what happens here in our higher ed institutions, right? Some students may enjoy their time there and, you know, not feel the tension and not feel the the very dissonance of what comes with coming to a higher ed institution. But some may. And I think, you know, we're not all the same. We come from all different nations. And I think it's very important to recognize that we all have different experiences, but really thinking about the holistic experience that we're providing. One that was provided at these boarding schools, but also at higher ed institutions.
I want to just spend the last moments here on looking for some solutions. I mean, you've had a role in tribal consultation policies for the UW to honor sovereignty. And I'm wondering, how can campuses develop better relationships?
It's, you know, any relationship takes time, right? It takes time and takes energy and real, this genuine want and desire to be in collaboration with these nations. And I think, you know, just being open and just really understanding that some of the policies and practices that may have done up until this point may not be what the tribal nations want, and we need to be okay with that, right? We need to be okay with shifting our institution to be able to make it just as flexible for our students and our tribal nations to be a part of this process, and be in collaboration with them, and really working with our tribal nations and understanding that, you know, education is really one small kind of entity that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And how can we work all together to be successful and to create successful institutions for our students and our faculty and our staff moving forward, and really, you know, for our nations. What do our nations want for our students when they come out and they graduate?
Sasanesa, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me, and thanking you for really providing light to this topic. I think it's really important for folks who don't understand it and really to think more about, you know, this is just the start of a conversation, and how can we understand this more?
Start of a conversation. Sasanesa Jennings, Native American Student Success Coordinator at the UW System. She's an enrolled member of the Menominee Nation. Just ahead, we talk with a podiatrist about what you need to know to keep your feet healthy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.